Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus. And a warm welcome to all of our listeners this afternoon. And it's the end of Māori Language Week, but there's been a lot of action out there. And I'm very pleased that we have in the studio with us today Huia Murupainga. Welcome, Huia.
Tēnā koe.
And our topic today is going to be about learning and why it's important to learn right through your lifespan. It's something that the Mental Health Foundation is focused on their five ways to wellbeing. And we have talked about take notice and be active and connect and those ones, and even give, you know, volunteer. But we haven't actually focused on the one that they say learn, ako. So that'll be really interesting today. I have some updates for you. Of course, this is the lead up to the election, and a very important time for a lot of people who are engaged in the process in one way or another, whether it's scrutineering, whether it's managing polling booths, whether it's going out to rest homes and retirement villages and working as a JP, helping sign people up so they can vote. There's so many different roles involved in the whole election process. But I'm not going to talk about parties or their manifestos or their policies, because it is a moving feast. There's so much being announced and changed and shifted day by day. It's quite hard to keep up. And so any program that tried to cover things off would be out of date before it was ever broadcast. So I made a decision some weeks back that we wouldn't focus this time on actual parties or candidates or policies. But I have to say, this is a really unusual election in that mental health has become quite a major topic. A real concern in the community has been brewing away and perhaps not responded to adequately, either in terms of budget or in terms of programs and treatment. And so we've seen a big reaction from the clinicians and the ministry who look at the customer service focus. We've seen some big seminars run around the country, and we've seen some announcements about improved funding. So I hope that whoever comes into power will continue on this wave of momentum of working to get improvements in this area. Now, this is spring, really, and it's been cold, even freezing on some days, but we are looking at moving into some celebratory activities. And in the Auckland community, once a year, the Pa Homestead, which is probably our most historic building we have in the whole Upper North Island, it's an Italian-style 2.5-storey with a turret, rather beautiful building really, and full of kauri wood, and sits on a high prominent position, which was a par site formerly, in Hillsborough Road. And they have an open day once a year, so they're having the Par Homestead open day on the 30th of September, and everyone is welcome. It's a free day. There will be all kinds of stalls and activities, so you'll be able to try your hand at a number of art and craft activities. You'll be able to see the collection in the art gallery in the actual house. I believe they're doing turret tours later on as part of the Heritage Festival, and they are gearing up, I think, for what will be, as long as the weather holds, a really excellent day, and it will be bigger and brighter than it's been ever before. So 30th of September, the Pa Homestead from 10 till 3, and I really encourage you to go along and take your grandkids and family along, make a picnic day of it, picnic in the park in Monte Cecilia. And it's on the bus route, it's really easy. So at this point in time, we're going to take a music break. And I've selected from Bic Runger's Close Your Eyes a track called Dream a Dream. Enjoy. Welcome back again, and if you've just joined us, this is Senior Focus. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, your presenter today, and I have in the studio with me Huia Murupainga, and welcome again, Huia.
Kia ora.
And it's great to have you with us. Now, our subject today is learn, ako, and I thought about the significance of why we've got this here. Because it's Māori Language Week, I wanted to sort of link in with the fact that learning a language in older age is a very protective thing. It's very protective against the dementia and changes in the brain, Alzheimer's. So it can starve off those things that you might be heading towards. And a lot of people report that they do take up language learning in older age. My hero was my husband's aunt, dear Auntie Elsie, who started at 62 going to night school learning Italian. And wow, she had a natural affinity for this language, and she won a scholarship to go to Perugia in Italy. And so she was, I didn't know her in those days until she returned to Aotearoa. And when she came back for our wedding, wearing Mary Quant outfit with her hair in a plait so long she could sit on it. And she was a very remarkable woman. So she finished her studies by, first of all, start enrolling in a BA, and she finished that at age 80, and she studied 8 languages.
That's amazing.
Including Old English, Middle English, Greek, you know, including her Italian. She did 3 years of Italian at university. And we were so proud of her. And, you know, I think of many stories about wonderful grandmas that ride motorbikes and play rugby, but Auntie Elsie that learned 8 languages was something of a complete character in her in herself. So she's inspired me. But I started out thinking about learning te reo when I was 19, when I travelled overseas as a volunteer. I'd worked in Fiji, and I had also worked in Sydney with Aboriginal people. And I kept on being asked, you know, what language do the Māori people speak? And can you speak it? Wow. And I felt so inadequate. Mm. And so on my return, I decided to switch classes. So I was enrolled at Canterbury University, but I needed to do a couple of papers to finish my BA. And I transferred to Wellington because there were no classes available. There was nothing. There was no way I could learn te reo in Canterbury. It was just totally English or nothing. So I enrolled at Victoria University in the Māori Studies department. I wasn't game to take the language class. I thought I'll do the Māori Studies class in the anthropology department. Mm. And I will get close. And I'll test myself out. And I also joined the Polynesian Society and began singing waiata, which I found I had a great passion for. But it was at Te Haerenga Waka Marae, the marae attached to Victoria University, that I became aware of the huge scope of te reo. There were some masters of the reo there. Wiramu Parker was one. And I was so fortunate to have access to these fantastic speakers and to be really captivated by their capacity to open people's hearts, to expand people's ideas. And I caught the concept that Māori was an umbrella, strategic kind of thinking language, that you could have fun with concepts. And so that's made me want to ask you, Huia, about the word ako, learn.
Aye. So the if you look at each of the kupu in te reo, there's always a whakapapa. So when we look at the whakapapa, what does that actually mean? And ako is more than just the translate learn. It is about the whole being. So as a being on this universe, how do we connect? How do we whakawhanaungatanga to each other? So it's not just the learn word, it's more than that. But each word has a real whakapapa to it. And with our elders, they hold that mātauranga. They hold that real treasure and the knowledge of that. So I always class myself as I'm not fluent in the language. I learnt from my baby went to kohanga, and I had no idea what the tamariki were saying to me. So I was real whakamā. I was really embarrassed. So my journey started at 27 years old. Went to MIT and started learning the language. And what I found was when I went back home to kōrero with my father, he would ask me, "Nō hea tō kōrero? Where did you get that kōrero from?" And my response to him is from the book, because there was nowhere else that I really could gauge in that. My father was native, a native speaker. Beautiful, really beautiful. But as a young girl,
when I would listen to the kui and kaumātua, I didn't know what they were talking about. But there's such a richness. There's such a richness in the reo, in any language, but specifically in our reo, te reo Māori.
I certainly can agree when I think about those people who have translated te reo into Shakespeare, or Shakespeare into te reo.
Oh, yes.
And just how fantastically that can be dramatic and acted out. And
it's poetry.
It
is
poetry.
You know, it's just so beautiful and graceful. And it's when people say, what does that mean? So have you got a whole day for me to explain that to you? And really, if you want to know the essence or the mana of that reo, because it's a living thing, then you need to sit with our elders, because they hold that real treasure with that language and really understand where that comes from. And I'm by no means an expert, but I do understand how I feel about things when I do kōrero, when I do whiti kōrero with my tamariki or even with our elders.
I can echo too from my experience, because I was supported and tautoko was given, and I was corrected, and I was given such opportunity by two Ngāti Porou women.
Wow.
And they were both native speakers. And one was a trailblazer in the primary school in Cannons Creek in Porirua, and she was my senior teacher. I was under her as a PA and in my probationary assistant year, and I really owe her such a debt, because I wouldn't be confident to speak on marae or to karanga or to even do the waiata performance that I've done without all the input that she's put into me. So there was a big investment went on, and I think that was going on in many other people's lives, because I looked around, I saw people inside police, I saw people in the education system, and they were people who were able to show leadership and help expand options, create bilingual options and situations. And they wouldn't have happened without that investment.
Aye. And it's the connection I have when you talk about your kaiako, who's Ngāti Porou. My kaiako was Ngāti Porou. And, she was like a real scary person. But her challenge was to get the kōrero. You have to stand and you have to kōrero all the time. So what's sitting in your head, you practice it. So it's really beautiful. Mm. But it wasn't until I returned home that I listened, and it's the listening and really understanding that you're able to get some foundation.
Yes, it's the opportunities to be away from English that are really quite crucial. I noticed when I started to do the language at Te Heringa Waka that we would have intensives and we would go on to the marae and we would not be allowed to speak English at all. And this would go on for a whole weekend. I also was giving back through the wānanga. The Wānanga Raukawa on the Kapiti Coast in Otaki, and in going there as a lecturer and giving my time to lecture in mental health, I was in a total immersion environment, and that was quite challenging, but extremely exciting too. And again, all the things that I'd been taught and caught through processes came back to me. So I did find that often I knew more than I thought I knew once I was away from English, and I had those channels and that memory, and I could bring all of my energy to bear in that, just staying on that groove.
Yeah, and you look at, and so all three of my tamariki are fluent. Mm-hmm. They go to kura, they've been through kohanga. So they switch, they go from English and te reo Māori so easily. But when they converse with my parents, that's really interesting, because they've got contemporary Māori And it's not necessarily the mita o te reo. It's not from their home. So even though my father has and my mum can understand the words, it's really, if you really want to know your own language or your own dialect, it's about going back home. So where home is, what are your own people? How are they able to kōrero with each other? And there's always a difference. There's a real difference. And it's beautiful because I was talking to my uncle yesterday, Sawan Muru, who's a real beautiful orator. And he was saying when he went into broadcasting, actually, that he listened to all the dialects, all the different Māori dialects, because he wanted to pay respect to that. So when he would kōrero, and if he was talking to a person who was from Ngāti Porou, he'd make sure that he would mimic that. And a comment to him was, oh, gee, how did you do that? And he said that he listened to all the dialects. He was able to, he goes, oh, it was māma noiho. It was really easy. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I can hardly speak English and Māori. And here he is knowing all the dialects right across Aotearoa. So that just pays homage to the real respect that our elders have, and even to some extent our young generation. But it's different. You know, different worlds. So how do we ensure that we still keep that tikanga, keep that Māori, eh?
Yes, that Māori. And it's energy.
Yes.
And going back to my early days of learning, and when I was at the university in Wellington, I was at the stage where the Māori Renaissance was springing up, and we had the start of a very temporary broadcasting license for Māori radio. And that was so exciting because I remember Hare Williams as the lead broadcaster leading the programs for the first 6 weeks. And at the end of that time, we had a big protest. All the kohanga children from all the different kohanga across Wellington all marched on Parliament with their caregivers and their parents and teachers and kaiako. And it was absolutely amazing, and it poured with rain on the day, but we still went. And I remember Tunia Baker, who's passed on now, but I remember her as a broadcaster being up there on the steps and taking the petition to the minister. And this was to get an ongoing licence to run Te Upoko Te Ika. And now we have Māori radio throughout the country. And we know that it's such a rich opportunity for people to tell stories in their own language. So, yes, I can think back to those days with very warm feelings. But the giants around, like Wirimu Parker and Hare Williams and so on, actually did really motivate me. Because I didn't find it easy. No. And I hadn't grown up with the language. But I can honestly say that I have had the best role models. And just in not only in terms of the motivation, but in terms of the pronunciation and so on. So, I mean, I can have fun sometimes. If I need to ring somebody, I can kōrero I te reo. And they may often think that I am Māori, and
but
it's
you
quite
are.
Funny. But I am in my own way, as one of my kui said, well, you have a brown heart. But my mother was given tribal status, had a Māori name and everything, but I am not able to trace whakapapa back from her. But my grandmother was a politically very active woman and very aware, and used to have Michael Joseph Savage to morning tea in her home, and she was quite a character, and was in the Seamstress Union in Christchurch. And she had a wonderful love of things Māori, and so that's translated to me. So I feel I've been very lucky. It's been very, very wonderful.
Well, it's interesting that you were talking about how it has been challenging to learn that all, because I found that as well. And it was really scary to go back and do my own language. But it is now, when I think back on it, it's beautiful to actually be able to whiti kōrero, to understand some of the kōrero that goes on. Yeah, really privileged.
It's one of those things that you never lose, and you never it can't do you any harm. Mm. But some of the benefits can be quite amazing. The language is very close to Sanskrit and Latin in terms of structure. So the double vowels actually they lead to an opening of the heart. They do actually lead to a different kind of mental state. And it can be very healing for people to learn te reo. And I think that it should be part of a number of programs that people do in terms of spirituality because of its impact.
Mm.
And you just see that with waiata, with people who
yes.
who just sing waiata, and the transformation in them.
And even that. Karanga, you know, yes. when you go into karanga, it is you're going into another realm,
another dimension.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is such so beautiful. Atahua.
And on that note, I want to thank you for coming in. We're going to listen to Anika Moore from one of her albums and a track entitled Kotahitanga, which takes us full circle to our conversation at the beginning about how important it is as a nation for us to pull together and not so much focus on our differences, but learn to talk across boundaries. And I was thinking about, with the language, how we had a borrowing period in the 1800s when Europeans first came, because a lot of words were borrowed from Māori and brought into English, like biddy biddy and different words like that. But now it's kind of interesting because we've got the technology, we've got the new words like rural hiko, and we've got the texting that you were talking about, the young people, and their meter, their rap rhythms coming in. And we've got wonderful combo words like whāwaho.
Oh, whāwaho. That's my favourite. Whāwaho.
and translate far out.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's something people might like to try on their grandchildren.
Mm.
I think that this has been a great opportunity to share, and I appreciate you coming into the studio.
Oh, kia ora. Kia ora mō
tēnā. I know that your work is in helping families heal and that you're doing wonderful work in Auckland, and it's great to meet you at the Wesley Market from time to time. Because this is an informal environment where we do share. So the conversation today is just another element of that, I think.
It is. Oh, kia ora mō tēnā. Ngā mihi.
Thank you. And we'll switch and we'll listen to Anika Moore to finish.
Aye.
He rangi papa tu anuku. Aotearoa kotahitanga How strange delight is to have our lovers tied. How strange delight is to have our lovers tied.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6 or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus, and do note Senior Focus is one word.